Welcome to the Aquarimax audio show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 250, recorded May 11th, 2015.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers.
Lots of twos and fives in the dates in the episode today.
That's true, huh? Look at that.
May's even the fifth month.
Yeah.
Although there's just the 11th, it's not the 2nd or the 12th or the 20th, but okay. You can't have everything.
No. But that's quite a milestone, 250 episodes.
250. It's halfway to 500.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
It is halfway to 500, yeah. Someday we'll get there, maybe, huh?
Maybe so.
Well, one thing is we talked to everybody about the aquaponics tour that we took.
Oh, did we do that? Did you get that up?
No, it's not up yet. But it will be.
Okay. Let's tell them just a little about how we're going to do it.
Yeah. We're going to do it because it's kind of a bonus episode. Because there were a lot of people there with our group, and it turned out to be a little bit difficult
to actually interview.
Yeah. But we did get some information. I think it'll be interesting for those of you who might be interested in aquaponics. And I know that
it's more about the growing
that.
Thing side necessarily than the fish so
but
much.
But it does
side.
Talk about the fish too. And, you know, the aquaponics involves fish, obviously. And this particular setup had both koi and there were two installations at the facility. One of the smaller one had koi in the tank, and then the larger one had trout, actually.
Yeah.
Interesting. Apparently, tilapia are illegal here.
Oh, we didn't know that.
In this state. So, yeah, that was interesting. Part of the deal is that it was raining uncharacteristically rather hard, and that may have affected the sound quality somewhat.
Because it was inside a greenhouse with the plastic sheeting kind of greenhouse.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how the sound is going to turn out, but we've got some video footage and some photos and the sound. So we're going to try to put it together as a bonus episode. Hopefully it'll work. And it'll be interesting. I thought it was interesting and relevant in terms of those of you who have mentioned or expressed an interest in aquaponics. So
we'll work on getting that up as just an extra.
Yeah. We certainly found it interesting, learned some cool stuff.
Yep.
So, let's move on to our contributors for the week.
Okay, well, we have Paul in Central California, who I think is new.
He's a new contributor,
And then we have two emails from Matt in Perth, Western Australia. So,
and then I've got some things, too.
Yeah, Russ is going to be a contributor again today.
Yeah.
We have Russ in Salt Lake.
Okay.
I'm just joking.
You're teasing me again.
I never tease you. What are you talking about? I just sing about surface area. I never tease you.
Okay. Well, Paul in Central California. Like you said, he's a new contributor, so welcome.
Welcome, Paul. Mm-hmm. And he says, "Hello, Aquarimaxers. I enjoy your podcast. Thank you. Would earthworms be an acceptable live food treat for our family pet? Finn, our 4-year-old common goldfish, normally eats a great variety of pellet flake and gel foods. For treats, he loves freeze-dried krill, frozen bloodworms, and any housefly, beetle, mosquito, or moth that we manage to stun and toss in his tank. Believe me, no dog has ever been more grateful for a bone than Finn is for a yummy moth that is still kicking when he gets it. Finn is 7 inches long and lives in a 16-gallon tank that he has all to himself. His tank is filtered by an internal power filter and also a homemade fluid bed filter using a small soda bottle containing cut-up drinking straws as the bacteria-bearing media. Finn came to our home from our small-town elementary school carnival when my daughter, then in the 5th grade, landed a ping-pong ball in his tiny-sized deli cup. The deli cup holding Finn was very tiny, but Finn was only a quarter of an inch long, so it seemed okay. My daughter's now in high school, and Finn has grown. He graduated from the deli cup into a pint ale glass, and then into a flower vase, and soon into a bigger vase. After a year, he moved into a 2-gallon lemonade dispenser, filled with water, not lemonade, of course, then into a 6-gallon tank using a hang-on-the-back filter with a bio wheel. Finally, we bought our friend Finn the 16-gallon aquarium he now calls home. Daily water changes of 90% were the rule in the early years, but now that Finn has filters, 10% daily water changes keep everything on track, because Finn is a messy eater and a big pooper."
We've got a picture of him, too.
Yeah, we can put the picture up.
Yeah.
So, would earthworms be okay? Cut them up with scissors, perhaps? Earthworms are filled with dirt. Would the dirt upset Finn's digestion? How about something else, like maybe scuds, or would scuds be too small for Finn? Your advice on suitable live foods would be appreciated. Thanks, Paul.
Well, thank you, Paul. It's nice to hear a success story about goldfish.
Yes, those little ping pong ball goldfish are often sad stories.
Yeah, but this sounds like it was a success, and he did start out quite tiny. Mm-hmm. You don't often see a goldfish that small.
Just hatched, probably.
But, yeah, it wasn't very old at all. But it's nice to hear that you've provided him with a 16-gallon aquarium. That's a pretty decent size for one goldfish. And sounds like with the frequent partial water changes and everything, and the filtration, with the extra biofiltration you got on there, it sounds like he's doing well. He looks like he's doing well in the picture.
Yeah, he looks happy in the picture.
Like a happy fish. So, earthworms. Let's talk about that for a second. Earthworms are okay for goldfish. They can be quite good as long as you take care of a few things. One of the issues to think about is pesticides. If you have, for example, an organic garden, collecting earthworms is probably fine. If you want to collect them from the lawn where there have been, you know, applications of weed killers and so on, it's probably not such a great idea.
Fertilizers,
that kind of stuff. So, let's assume, first of all, that the earthworms are collected in a place where pesticides have not been used for a long time. Then they are fine, but the idea that you mentioned that they're filled with dirt, that is a concern. Probably not so much for the health of the goldfish, because in the wild, they're digging up, you know, muddy bottoms. Not that, you know, goldfish per se are found in the wild so much, but their ancestors, the Crucian carp, are digging up muddy bottoms and so on, and ingesting, spitting out grit and sand and dirt and that kind of thing. So I don't think that would be so much of an issue in terms of their digestion, but in terms of the cleanliness of a tank, it might have an effect. Now, you can set some earthworms in a container, you know, a ventilated container and some moist paper towels or newspaper for a couple of days, you know, just black and white newspaper, not the glossy colored stuff, and let them evacuate their gut contents.
So they don't have so much in them.
Right. Keep them in there for 24, 48 hours and they'll pretty much be empty of the gritty, sandy, dirty kind of stuff. And then you can use them. And I would say for a 7-inch goldfish, an earthworm that's about 2 inches long or so would be fine whole. I have fed earthworms to goldfish about that size, and they've been fine. You could also cut them up. Scissors or a razor blade is probably what I would recommend. Would work fine, too. And if you have a larger one, you know, cutting it up into several pieces would be good. So, hopefully, in terms of earthworms, I think we've pretty much covered the bases, right? You can use compost worms, and that's what I've done in the past as well. Compost worms tend to be a little bit smaller as adults, like the red worms that I've used, and so you don't need to worry about that so much in terms of cutting them up, because they're already fairly small, and they don't tend to have a lot of grit in their digestive systems because they eat softer things. They don't eat soil so much, but they eat plant matter that's decaying, and so they tend to be relatively grit-free. They do ingest a little bit of grit, but not near as much. So those are some ideas. Another couple of ideas that we could talk about. One where you suggested scuds. Well, I'll tell you, when we lived in Hawaii, we had a goldfish tank. I think it was a 29-gallon tank with a couple of goldfish in it. And we had scuds that would live in the gravel and under the rocks especially. So when I was doing a water change with our python, I would gently scoot the rocks to the side and then use the python to suck up the detritus and so on. And as I did so, some scuds would inevitably be sucked up as well. But they wouldn't be sucked up all the way. They would pull against the current and try to swim back down. And so what I would do is put that in front of the goldfish and kind of shake it to get the scuds out. And as the scuds came out, or lifted a little bit, and then the scuds would, you know, be free. And the goldfish learned to, you know, wait there. And when the scuds would swim down, they'd grab them and eat them. And so these were large goldfish, about the same size as Finn. Some of them were approximately 7 inches long, I'd say. Peter was probably about that long. And Calico Jack was fatter, but not long, much different big, in terms big, of mass.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think scuds are fine for goldfish of that size. They're appropriate. They're also pretty easy to culture. Like mm-hmm. one of the easiest live foods, really, as long as you have a tank with some aeration in there, some surface area.
Surface area.
They're great. Some other things you could look at would be bean beetles. Now, I'm not sure if they're legal in your area, and they may well not be, considering the fact that the fairly mild climate you have in Central California would, you know, permit them to establish themselves in agricultural areas if you happen to grow adzuki beans or black-eyed peas or mung beans. So I don't know if they're legal in your area. If they are, though, goldfish do like those. Another one that's almost certainly legal in your area would be the Drosophila heidii, is how it's often pronounced. The larger species of fruit fly that's commonly cultured for use with amphibians and fish. I've fed those to our large goldfish. They seem to enjoy them a lot. Mm-hmm. They're easy to culture. You can even go to a big box pet store and find those. They're this sort of fruit fly that's flightless but not wingless. They have really large, overdeveloped wings that are useless. But that
kind of like ostriches.
Kind of like that, I guess. Except you don't really feed ostriches to goldfish.
Oh, come on.
But
you just need a really big goldfish.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
Like a shark.
Like a 60-foot goldfish, maybe.
Yeah, like a big great white shark that you paint orange.
That's a strange image. But those fruit flies work well for goldfish. What are some other things that work well for goldfish? Daphnia. They like them. Even though they're fairly small in comparison to goldfish, they seem to really go after them. The jerking motions attract them. They mm-hmm. get a kick out of it. And because goldfish eat a lot of plant material in the wild, their ancestors do. The crucian carps do. And goldfish in natural, fairly natural conditions, and like in a pond or if they're in a lake or whatever, they eat a lot of plant material. And
it's good for them.
Yeah, and if you put them in a tank with plants, you'll notice they eat a lot of plant material too. And most species of plant don't do very well with goldfish because they get eaten. There are exceptions to that, like the Anubias in our tank. But plant materials that we've used as fresh foods for our goldfish include, because you didn't specifically mention plant material, although you mentioned a great variety of foods, maybe you could try some of those. Just some romaine lettuce. You just toss a few pieces in there. You don't have to blanch it or anything.
The soft part, not the crunchy part.
Right, the soft part is the best. And they'll just nibble on that until it's gone.
Thin cucumber slices.
Right, they love cucumber slices.
Or zucchini slices.
Zucchini slices too, yep. What else?
Green peas, you just slip the little skin off, so you just pop those two little halves of the pea itself out.
Mm-hmm. They love those. Those are very good for them.
And canned green beans that you split open.
Mm-hmm. Just split them open because otherwise the fish have a hard time
getting into through it. The outside layer.
What else? Little bits of orange.
Orange pulp.
Yeah, the little...
Like peel the skin off.
And the little individual little capsules. Mm-hmm. You just toss those in and they eat those. What else? We try to go easy on the fruit, light on the fruit, because of all the sugars in there. Not necessarily like something the fish veggies. Are set up to digest, mm-hmm. At least not goldfish. But yeah, all those veggies work well.
If you happen to have duckweed, you can toss that in, they'll eat it all.
Oh, they love duckweed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are some options, a lot of options, that can help contribute to Finn's healthy life, although it looks like you're already well on the way to
He's a lucky carnival fish.
Very lucky.
Most carnival fish are not so lucky.
So we're happy to hear of Finn's success story, that you have dedicated your time and your resources to
quite a few years
providing Finn with a happy life. It's great to hear.
It's time for that station break thingy when I tell you how you can play an active part in the Aquarimax community. If you want your questions or comments featured on the show, send us an email at info@aquarimax.com or call and leave a message at 801-477-0629. You can also subscribe to the Aquarimax YouTube channel, like our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter.
And now for a blatant but extremely brief plug.
Our ebook, The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods, is available on Amazon.com for $2.99. So, shall we go on to Matt?
Yeah.
Okay.
And let us know if there are any questions or, you know, follow-up mm-hmm. things you'd like to mention about that, and we'll be happy to help you out.
So, Matt, he's sent us 2 emails this mm-hmm. time, so we'll start with the first one. He says, my Hydor Slim Skimmer arrived today. Interesting fact, the Hydor is sold internationally, and yet on the pump it says 110 volts at 50 hertz. The Australian power grid works on 230 volts at 60 hertz. In theory, the double voltage should destroy the pump. However, I knew in this case that Hydor makes a dual voltage pump that can detect what it is being fed and adjust accordingly. That's nice.
Yeah.
So it doesn't explode.
That's convenient.
Mm-hmm. Sadly, the skimmer is gigantic compared to the tank. I tried to put it in, and in the process ruined my aquascaping. Then I turned on the skimmer, and it was loud. That is not okay due to the tank being in my bedroom.
This sounds like a series of unfortunate events.
I know. So I've decided to just run the skimmer and a much bigger skimmer on my 680-liter, 180 gallons, 6-foot tank when I make the conversion. So he's just going to use them on his other tank when he converts it over.
Right, to salt.
Mm-hmm.
Water, marine tank.
But I know how you feel. It's lovely to have fish tanks in your bedroom, but not if they're making a bunch of noise when you're trying to sleep.
Right. There have been occasions when there's something just a bit wrong with one of the tanks. And right now we only have one aquarium in our bedroom. But there have been times where the filter pushes up against the cover glass or something.
And it starts
making this buzzy, vibratory noise. And it'll be, you know, we're drifting off to sleep and Kelly will say, Russ, what's that noise from the fish tank?
You gotta fix it or I can't sleep.
And I'll go over and tap it and it'll go away. And then maybe half an hour later, it starts buzzing.
That's so annoying.
So, yeah, definitely something you have to fix if you've got noises coming out of your fish tank.
Yep. He says, I am disappointed that the skimmer did not work out. I have decided to revert back to my regular large water change approach. Bear in mind that there is zero brown algae and ammonia nitrite nitrates all read zero. So next on my list is a first-class LED light. I have heard that this would stimulate the beneficial coralline algae and coral to absorb nutrients, therefore doing some of the work of the skimmer. So that sounds like a good way to go.
You're going to get some natural nutrient export by way of turning it into biomass of the coral and so on. Mm-hmm.
I have attached links to the lights I have chosen and the general company page at the bottom of the email. It is called a mantra and will cover the whole length of the tank. It covers 2/3 of the width also, which is exciting. You get a nice coverage of light there.
Right, that's important too.
Yeah. I'm excited that I'll get complete tank coverage without the need to hang the light. Therefore, the coral will get the most intense light. This should produce the most growth. If some are looking burnt by the light, I shall put them deeper in the tank.
It's an important concern sometimes. Mm-hmm. Even corals that are very capable of handling large amounts of light are not necessarily capable of handling quick changes in light.
They have to kind of get used to it.
Yeah, if you're using a bulb like a compact power fluorescent bulb, for example, and you've had it for about a year, which is about the useful life of a lot of those bulbs, a lot of times if you put your corals, if you just switch the bulb for an identical bulb, the light intensity will be different enough that the corals will start showing signs of stress.
So how do you switch them?
Sometimes it's good to just put them lower down in the water column, like he's mentioning, for a while until...
And then kind of slowly move them back up.
Then you can slowly move them back up.
We wouldn't have to do that, you know, with terrestrial plants. If they've been inside your office during the winter and you want to put them out during the summer, we have to kind of acclimate them to the sunshine.
Put them in a shady
sunshine.
Spot for a week or two.
So they don't get burnt.
Yep, same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good... good parallel.
Yeah, look at me. He says, I traded in 6 bristlenose Placos today for 2 baby peppermint bristlenose Placos. I do not know if you have owned peppermints, but they are much prettier than their more common relatives. And Russ looked up pictures to show me.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like they've got a nice, you know, the contrast is higher.
Yeah. Yeah, they got the little...
Darker colors with brighter spots.
Little tiny... white spots on the really dark background.
Although I couldn't figure out why they called them peppermint. They have no red. It's not like they're red and white. And I doubt they taste like peppermint. And they probably don't smell like peppermint.
Well, you never know till you've eaten it, right?
So, I don't know. I was wondering why they called them peppermint.
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know the answer to that
Sometimes people who name animals have funny reasons. Maybe the guy who discovered them was eating a peppermint at the time, and so every time he looked at them, he remembered peppermints.
Could be.
Who knows?
I don't know. But they are pretty fish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were pretty.
I can understand why you'd prefer those to normal bristle noses.
He says, it turns out I had way too many bristle noses, and they were eating my Amazon sword plants aggressively. I am confident that the lower bristle nose concentration will result in better plant growth. I'm also buying my new plant LED fixture from Dalua, too. It is called the COB Advance, and I am told it will do great things for my aquatic gardening.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. He says, okay, that is all for now. Any thoughts about the lighting would be great. Thanks, Tony from New York, for complimenting my hiring the fish vet. I forgot to mention that in my last email. And then he sent the links, so we'll put those up.
Well, I looked up the company based on the links that he sent, yeah. And it appears to be an exclusively Australian company, which I was kind of sad about because I'm in the market for a new LED light right now.
Well, let's just go to Australia.
Basically, I'm just on my way to Australia.
That's a great quote.
Yeah.
And if any of you know what that's from, you get double points because it's not that common.
It's kind of an obscure quote.
It's an oldie but a goodie.
Yeah. But anyway, it seemed like a good company. They had some great options. One of the things that I liked, and this is not exclusive to this company, but they have timers on their light fixtures, on some of them, some of the higher models, that will allow you to set up dawn and dusk effects.
That's fancy.
Which I think is really cool. Mm-hmm. I've always wanted to do that. So, you know, when you're early in the morning, you'll get a little bit of light that it'll just be low intensity, rather dim light, and then it slowly brightens, and then throughout the day it can be bright, and then it can dim at night. You can even set it to simulate a cloudy day or a lightning storm or different things.
I think you're making that part up.
No, I'm not.
You have that I'm making this up look on your face.
No, I'm pretty sure that's what it said.
Simulate a lightning storm?
Yeah.
Why would you want to do that in your fish tank?
And stuff. I don't know. It's kind of
neat. I think you're so joking.
No. Why would I joke about that?
Because you joke about everything.
No, it's cool.
You're so naughty.
No, it simulates various weather effects.
Yes, really. But not lightning storms.
I'm pretty sure it said that.
I think you're...
We'll look it up after.
You're pretty sure that it said that in your head.
No. I think it did. We'll look at it afterwards.
No.
And it's neat. I like it. I think it's cool. But the thing is, you could also choose a lower budget fixture. But the thing is, it would still have the same high quality lights, but just not so many customization options. Yeah, it just turns
on
and off.
No lightning storms, huh?
You just plug it in into a timer and you can turn it on and off, that kind of thing. But it's still got high quality light that grows your plants or your corals or whatever you're growing well.
So nice.
I like the fact that that's possible. You have a wide variety of choices from that company. I think it's also nice that LEDs are really coming into their own.
Mm-hmm.
I have noticed that over the past few years, getting like an aquatic catalog, I get the Doctors Foster and Smith catalog. They sell a lot of aquatic, you know, supplies, and I've purchased quite a few things from them. At any rate, a few years ago, you could get just normal fluorescent bulb fixtures. Single strip bulbs, mm-hmm. You could get single strip light fixtures, doubles, and you could get power compact fluorescents, and you could get T5s and high output T5s, and you could get maybe metal halides and maybe one or two LED fixtures. And now the balance has shifted. Most of the fixtures available are LED fixtures, and you get a few like T5s, high output T5 kind of thing. You can't find just the normal old T8, T5 fluorescents in there that I remember anymore.
It's mostly LEDs now.
Yeah, it's mostly LEDs. There are some other ones in there too, but the LEDs dominate. They're really coming into their own. Mm-hmm. So that's exciting from a standpoint of saving money, from a standpoint of environmental sustainability too, because the mercury is an issue with fluorescent bulbs. They all contain mercury.
Which is scary stuff.
LEDs don't. Kind of nice. Mm-hmm. And it really, from a cost-effective standpoint, too, it's nice because the LEDs last when they last. They last longer. And I may have mentioned I have to replace a fixture. Our goldfish tank has now gone from having... It started out having two white light banks and one blue moonlight light bank. And now it has just the blue moonlights. All the white light bags are gone. And so, and it's an LED fixture, but it's a Marineland Double Bright, and they do not replace, they're not replaceable. Once the bulb has gone out, there's nothing.
At least those ones weren't when we bought them.
And now the newer versions of some of LED fixtures, you can replace the diode when the diode goes out.
So you don't have to buy the whole new fixture, right. You just have to buy, which makes more sense.
Which is nice. Yeah, that's so nice. I'm still looking into which variety I should get, but which particular
brand. Well, we just need to take a trip to Australia and you can pick one up and there you go.
But then they have the different electricity levels, the different voltage. I still want to go to Australia, so don't worry about that. But,
details!
Yeah.
We'll just change the electric in our house.
Oh, there you go.
Because then we can go to Australia.
Okay. So I'm interested to see how those work for you. And so please keep us updated.
Okay. So Matt's next email says, "Hello, Aquarimax. I have bought a second skimmer for my nano tank, despite my commitment in the last email not to buy one." That happens sometimes.
Yeah.
"To allow for the skimmer to fit, I now have a tank with no glass lid on it, which feels odd. I am enjoying the increased accessibility, as my algae snails love dislodging my coral frags. At an aquarium shop, they recommended a lack of glass lids for improved light penetration."
It does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Marine tanks often are done that way for several reasons, and it does, the glass, when light has to pass through a different medium, changes from air to the glass, you lose some light from refraction, reflection, and different things. And also you've got the possibility of dust settling on the glass. That will happen, and you have to keep it clean if it's there. And another one is you get some salt creep, often, mm-hmm. just splashing, so on.
Kind of obscures it, so it just mm-hmm. doesn't get through as much.
And you have to clean it.
Yep. He says, "The new skimmer is a Tuns 9001. It is much smaller than the slim Hydor skimmer. But most importantly, this thing is quiet. Yay!" So we were just talking about noisy stuff.
Yeah.
"I can barely hear it when it is on. Now I am trying to figure out how to get the foam to just the right level. So far I have succeeded in generating a lot of seawater or no foam at all in my collection cup."
So I have to tweak that for a while to figure out exactly.
"I'm also about to order my high-end LED lights for the three aquariums. This is rather exciting. I can't wait to see how much more my plants and coral are going to grow. Once I have my high-end lighting, I can finally buy my bubble tip anemone. Nemo and Marlin will be ever so pleased. I have to admit that Marlin is actually a girl, but we can't let little things like that ruin a good name now, can we?" And it's true. As we have said before, we had a whole string of goldfish with pirate names that were boy names, and all of them turned out to be girl goldfish. And so when we bought another goldfish, we said, okay, we better give it a girl name. And we joked, but it will turn out to be a boy, which is, of course, exactly what happened.
Right. That's what you call ironic.
Mm. Except they was in a horse.
Instead of dresses.
Instead of dresses.
Yeah.
You look nice, though. Okay, he says, "The clownfish are already showing signs of pairing, which is nice. I have no intention of keeping any young, but it is enjoyable to watch their aquatic dance. I considered naming them the same as both parents in Finding Nemo, but that ruins the name recognition from the casual Disney fan."
True. They're more likely to recognize Marlin and Nemo because they were much more prominent characters in the movie.
Yes. Nemo's mother's name, of course, being Coral.
Right. But not everybody would remember that.
No. But Nemo and Marlin are good names, too.
Yep, I like it.
So he says, "No questions for this week, just an update."
All right, well, thank you, Matt. And we'll look forward to hearing how that goes. I confess that I would someday like to do a tank with clownfish and a bubble tip anemone.
That would be neat.
It seems like a lot of fun. But, of course, you do need a really strong light to do that, and I don't have one right now.
It's on the bucket list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But LED lights, I love them. I have had several. I've got on my vivariums, I have, let's see, got three LED bulbs, right? Two on the larger vivarium, one on the smaller. I love the fact that they don't heat things up and they are really bright. The plant growth I have noticed, and these are terrestrial ones, of course, but the plant light, or the plant growth has responded very positively. Mm-hmm. You see a definite difference. It's nice.
Yeah.
So I am assuming that your fixtures are going to be similar in terms of your aquatic plant growth. All the aquatic LED lights that I have used have not been particularly suited to plant growth. So, like I said, in the goldfish tank, we have Anubias, which grows great with that kind of bulb, but a lot of other plants would not. I initially put that fixture on a 20-gallon high, hoping to grow a lot of plants. Didn't work very well, and I had to eventually go back to a compact power fluorescent and then later to a T5, high-output T5, because it just wasn't working to grow the other plants. So, yeah, but with Anubias, it's fine.
Yep.
So, sometime I would like to actually do an LED plant-specific light, but so far I haven't done that.
Speaking of plants, though,
mm-hmm.
you have your update for us on the saga of the moss ball.
Oh, yeah. The moss ball, which I mentioned, was a brackish moss ball of some unknown species that was sold by PetShrimp.com. And apparently, you know, they were discovered in their tanks growing there, and now they're selling them for use with Opiula specifically. Anyway, I think I mentioned that I had purchased one, but it hadn't yet arrived. Last week, I believe I sent the order out on Saturday, and it shipped on Monday and was supposed to arrive by 2-day priority mail on Wednesday. By Thursday, it still hadn't arrived, and I looked it up, and the tracking number indicated that it was on its way to be delivered to a town about 2 or 3 hours east of here.
Totally the wrong place.
Yeah, and that was surprising to say the least, and a little bit disturbing. So I called up the post office, had a nice conversation with a very nice woman who was able to indicate to me that the post office had recognized that they had misscanned the package and that they were in the midst of rectifying the issue. And so the next day, which was Friday, I did receive the package. So this moss ball had been in the mail for a week. But when I opened it up, it was none the worse for wear. It looked fine, looked healthy and green.
It's just little wee mini. It's like the size of a marble.
Yeah, which is cool. It's kind of a bonsai marimo ball. Mm-hmm. I like that. And so it looks great. I put it into a jar with some brackish water next to my Opiula tank. And tomorrow, I'll be bringing it into work. I kept it for a few days here, and I'll be bringing it into work to put in my Opiula tank, my 10-gallon, which is doing great, by the way. The Opiula in there are extremely active. The tank looks very, you know, it's bustling with activity. Even though there are maybe 60 to 80 shrimp in there, I don't see ever that many out because some of them are always hiding in the rockwork. But I see easily 25 to 30 shrimp at any time, and often more than that, just busily eating away, turning red. They're getting redder and redder as the days go by, which is generally an indication that they're doing well and feeling healthy. Mm-hmm. In my 5.5 gallon, I had a little bit of a scare. Looked like a bacterial bloom occurred in there. Things started getting a little bit cloudy. I was worried about that. And I didn't have any salt mix the day when that started, and I was worried about that. So I put in a little prime, Seachem Prime, which detoxifies ammonia, nitrite, nitrate. And that, within hours, the tank was looking better. And now it looks good and is doing well. So I'm not too worried about that anymore. And it's fun to be experimenting with these things and see how this new type of algae is going to do with the Opiula. And I haven't had to feed the Opiula this whole time because there's algae growing in there and they're just eating. So all I have to do is top off the water occasionally, which I don't have to do very often because the tanks are covered. So very low maintenance. I probably won't have to feed them for a couple of months at least. And they'll probably be reproducing before that happens. But I do have one female in another Opiula tank that has probably, 30 eggs, which is a lot of eggs for an Opiula. I don't see that very often. I think I may have seen it once or twice before, but usually they carry, you know, 10, 15 eggs, something like that. So it's cool to see that she's doing well and has all these eggs, and I hope they all develop and get a lot of little babies. So Opiula are a lot of fun. I'm enjoying, you know, experimenting with some new things with their setup. And I think that's about it for now. I think you wanted to bring something up, didn't you?
Oh, yes. We just wanted to give you guys a heads up that near the end of the month we are moving. We are in process of buying our first own house, which we're really excited about. But as you guys all know, moving is crazy and stressful and busy, and sometimes internet connections and computers and field recorders don't set up when you think they're going to be set up.
Yeah, they take longer, and so...
So just in case we miss a week, we'll be back, and just, you know, so you know that's what's going on. We should be okay the rest of May, the way that, you know, the days that we usually record on work out, but if we miss a week, it would probably be the first week of June when we're trying to unpack all the boxes, but...
And hopefully it won't happen.
Hopefully not.
But if it does, you know why.
And we'll be back. Never, don't fret.
So, yeah, just be warned, and yeah, we'll see how it goes. Hopefully we won't have to worry about it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
in the meantime,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.